Hi, I'm Scott Hoppe, and when I'm not crushing the bike across the Golden Gate Bridge, I'm listening to John Garrett on the Green Apple Podcast.
Welcome to episode 119 of the Green Apple Podcast, where each Wednesday I interview a professional known for a hobby or a passion, making them stand out like a green apple in a red apple world. And when I tell you to imagine an apple in your head, I'm sure for most of you it's red. I know it always is for me, because in school, A is for apple. Remember that picture? Always up on the board, always a red apple, because that's the stereotype. But the interesting thing is that all apples actually start out green. And then over time, as they grow on the tree, they turn red, turning into that stereotype. But deep down inside all of us is this passion for something other than our jobs. And that's what I love to shine a light on each week here on the Green Apple Podcast. And thanks so much to everyone for subscribing and leaving ratings and comments on iTunes or the other Android apps. It's so encouraging to hear how much you enjoy what someone described to me as the least businessy podcast out there. So that's pretty classic. And I'm doing some research. It's a super short, 1 minute anonymous survey about firm culture and how maybe the Green Apple message might apply in your world. If you've got just 60 seconds, please go to greenapplepodcast.com. You can click that big green button there, answer a few quick questions. Again, it's totally anonymous. I really appreciate the help. And now it's time to introduce you to this week's guest, Scott Hoppe. He's a partner with Y Blue in San Francisco and was named to CPA Practice Advisor's 40 Under 40 list just last year. And I know you're super busy, Scott, so thank you so much for taking time to be with me on the Green Apple Podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me, John.
Oh, yeah. I'm just glad that you're able to be here and we were able to talk on the phone a little bit ago. And I gave everyone a little bit of your introduction, but maybe in your own words, a little bit of where you're at now and kind of how you got there.
Yeah, sure. So my career started off in San Francisco in tax at PwC. Spent a couple years there before leaving and going into industry. And for anyone that's like in public accounting now listening to this, the very, very big, big draw to working at this company, Gensler, it's an architecture firm, 8 hours a day maximum. And if you go over 8 hours, you get paid overtime.
Right. Wow. Yes. Yes. A couple people just fell out of their chairs listening to that.
Exactly. So you're right. When you're sitting there in public accounting where it's endless hours and like you could swim in a bucket of your hours.
Right. It was right.
So I left and you know, it was a stepping stone for doing what I ultimately wanted to do, which was open up my own practice and finish a PhD.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
When I was at Gensler, I started my doctorate and I was there for just under a couple of years before starting my own practice.
Yeah.
And for the last 3 years, I've been running an accounting firm, Hoppe Tax in San Francisco, and it's 100% cloud-based. And my team that I work with is all over the U.S. But my primary partner that leads out the accounting side of things, she's from Deloitte, and she's in Florida.
Oh, wow. Look at that. Opposite sides of the country. That's so great that you guys... And so how did you guys meet up then?
Really random. QuickBooks throws on a conference each year, QuickBooks Connect.
Yeah.
And it's in San Jose. So I went a couple years ago. I didn't really do bookkeeping, so I'm like, I went on the prowl to find a bookkeeper that was good.
Okay.
Lots of people do bookkeeping. And throughout this, you know, I met a ton of people. I met one lady, and she eventually introduced me to Diana. So I don't know how many degrees. That's probably only a few degrees separation. But all of a sudden, I got linked up with this lady in Florida who was, like, phenomenal. Big four, good work quality. Like,
right.
Does accounting, gets the big pictures, running her own practice. It was amazing.
Yeah, that's unbelievable. That's unbelievable. I actually spoke at that conference last year. It was pretty our paths have crossed so many times. I'm in your shadows. I'm right outside your window right now. Like, no, but that's so cool, man. And kudos to you for, you know, finishing the PhD and then going out there and starting your own practice. I mean, that takes a lot of guts, man. So, you're making it happen. So that's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Thank you.
I mean, that takes a lot of time as well. One thing that I love to ask everyone though is just like, what made you want to go into accounting?
You know, I can remember the moment that like I decided it, and it was very well thought out.
Yeah.
I must have been in high school, which seems kind of weird, but there's never a right time to decide this.
Sure.
My dad and I were in the backyard and we're throwing the football back and forth, and I'm like, you know, maybe I want to do this accounting thing. I know I want to do business. So once you know you want to do something in business, you're going through what type of decisions, like international business or human resources,
right?
Finance, accounting, marketing, etc. Even though I liked personal investing and I liked doing it myself, and you know, I was interested in stocks, like I didn't know if that's actually what I wanted to do.
Right.
And then outside of business, while I was in high school, I built computers and like custom computers and sold them and supported and serviced people.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I did that because I worked at Circuit City.
Oh, nice.
If you remember that name.
Nice. Nice.
And I could see that, you know, people weren't getting their needs met with what was off the shelf from HP and Compaq and all these guys. But Circuit City, they gave us a 401k.
Right.
And I remember being like, all right, 401k, good deal. So I was wired for this.
Yes, exactly. You have no choice, man. This is your destiny.
No choice.
The sooner you embrace it, the better it is for everyone, right?
Right. So then it's flashback, and we're in the backyard throwing the ball around with my dad, and I'm like, hey, yeah, this seems like a good idea. And there's no flags. No parent's going to be like, don't be an accountant.
Right.
If anything, right. They're like, great.
Exactly.
So we fast forward, and we get into, like, you know, you're in college, and you're taking your general ed class, and I had this accounting teacher, Dan Galvin, and I liked the guy, and I didn't know if I had the chops for it. So I asked him, hey, am I cut out for this accounting thing? Can I do it? And he's like, well, you seem like you pick up on it. Yeah.
Right.
Just that little confirmation there from him on like a quick conversation was enough for me to be like, all right, I'm going to do this and dive all in. And that's what I did. And
great.
I went to Cal Poly San Luis Obispo. I transferred there. So there's these things called internships that I had no knowledge of.
Okay. Okay.
Went 0 to 60 into the whole thing.
Right.
And that's it. I just catapulted right into accounting and here I am.
That's great, man. Well, congrats, dude. I mean, that's fantastic. I mean, really, really fantastic. Yeah, that's so funny. A high school kid getting jacked up about a 401k. Like, that's so funny to me. That's really funny. Really funny. But yeah, but there's certainly a whole other side to you, Scott. And that's what we're going to, you know, have some more fun with. But it's just, you know, what hobby, passion, when you do have some free time, do you like to go do on nights and weekends?
Yeah, I got, I got really lucky too with the school going to Cal Poly because it was very outdoorsy. And prior to that, I played football and I wrestled in high school, but I was always like a bigger guy.
Okay.
Yeah. So let's say like when you're a bigger guy, that puts running, biking, swimming, everything on like
right.
The back burner.
Yeah.
So, but then, you know, in the first couple of years of college, you go through this transformation. I'm like, no, I'm going to take care of myself. And I had this job after Circuit City down in the industrial park in my town, which was like maybe a 5-mile bike ride up and down a hill.
Oh, okay.
And I'm from Benicia. So if anyone's listening, that's from there. There we go.
Right.
So I started riding this bike to and from work and like sweating. I was like, oh man. Well, it was like a little $500 Fuji bike that I got from a standard store. And I started enjoying it so much that when I eventually crashed it when I was in college, like in the beginning, you don't need to know why,
right?
But you crash it.
The statute of limitation hasn't passed yet. Is that what it is?
So I bought this new bike, right? And I went on to something like, I'm talking about bikes because I love biking. And yeah. So you get into Cal Poly, it's like super outdoorsy. And I crash this bike and I go out and I buy a bike that's $800, but it's an off brand. And for anyone in the biking world, going from $500 on brand, it's way overpriced. $800 off brand means you're getting so much more bike for your money.
Yeah.
And I felt like that first moment when you're a kid and you learn how to ride and you have complete freedom.
Yeah.
It was amazing. And I have forever since that bike ride, I can remember the specific route and everything. I just fell in love. And like ever since I've been biking, I raced bikes once I got out of college. I raced bikes in college towards the tail end. I got to San Francisco and joined a couple clubs here and raced for this team called Squadra. So we were sponsored by Audi and then we were sponsored by Muscle Milk. And
wow.
I went all over the state and raced and I loved it. I loved it to no end. So that's my big passion. That's what I would do if I could do anything.
Yeah.
And actually, it's how I get to my CPE events.
Oh, nice.
I'll stay at a hotel a little bit away and I bike in.
That's so cool, man. That's so cool. It's like the guy on a Harley, except for it's the cycle. You know, it's like, yeah, look at that.
Except the spandex.
Here comes Scott. Click, 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 click. You hear your shoes clicking along. Like, it's like, there he is. Right.
I definitely stand out.
Yeah. That's so great, man. That's so great. And so it all started from this $800 bike.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's awesome, man. That's so cool. That's really neat. That's really neat. And so what are some of the more rewarding things or the cooler races? Or, I mean, how do these teams work? I mean, I've never participated or seen anything like that.
Yeah, good point. So you have a couple different types of races. There's like there's more than two, but generally you have a road race and a crit race. And a crit race, think like NASCAR. You're just going around a really tight circle for some set period of time, like 30 minutes, 45 minutes.
Okay.
Those are screamers. Okay. You're flying.
Yeah.
You have your team and you're trying to set yourselves up, and you're constantly in this strategy in this battle with other people to block them out and to block wind or...
That sounds like a roller derby almost, but on bikes. Like, it sounds crazy.
It's crazy. And here's the downside to crits. They're like crash happy.
Yeah. That's nuts.
I'm big on helmets.
Right, right, right. And elbow pad and like just jeans. Like, why is he wearing a snowsuit? We're doing the crit race today. That's why I was like, road rash everywhere, man. Yeah, that would be terrible.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
So you have these things, and they're all over and they're fun and you're hammering away. But then the road races are for me a lot more fun, because that's when you're racing through like vineyards and you're climbing mountains.
Right.
You're not necessarily just doing like the same lap a ton of times.
Yeah.
But you're probably out for an hour and a half to 3 hours doing a bigger 40 to 80 mile loop.
Right.
And that just lends itself to, it's more like a fast bike ride at that point, a competitive normal bike ride. And I dig that.
Right, right. No, that's cool, man. That's really neat. So is there any race that stands out to you or one that's, you know, coolest?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's this one that's up in Boonville, California.
Yeah.
And it was like the most difficult race I've ever done. If you're getting onto into the Lost Coast, and Boonville's like more northern California, like a couple hours north of San Francisco or 3 hours north.
Okay.
And it gets really mountainous, so you're doing this super difficult race that you go from inland California to Highway 1 and you're on the coast for a bit.
Right.
Well, the race finishes up this massive mountain. So you're like, you're chugging up. You're so tired. You're depleted. It's 80 miles.
Yeah.
I get in sixth place, which...
Wow.
Awesome. That's a good finish.
Yeah.
And right afterwards, I'm like, okay, let's head back to the car. My my now wife, who I wasn't dating at the time, was at the bottom of the hill with a couple of our friends, and we slept. I think we had like a Chevy Impala that we rented in San Francisco, and we like slept in the back of it, like four of us, the night before the race.
That's funny. Yeah, yeah, you have to sleep in the car.
Yeah, so like, exactly. So you power up this hill, and I'm like, okay, I'm gonna get back down to that Chevy Impala. All I can think about is I get a cold beer after this race, and great.
Right.
Well, downhill, I'm like depleted on everything, and I hit this super sharp corner, and it's like a hairpin, and I'm going way too fast. That my wheels lock up and I fly over my handlebars.
Oh no.
And I break my collarbone.
Oh no, no. And it's after the race.
So I finished this race, I did everything, and then I just...
Right.
Yeah. I destroyed myself.
Man, that's terrible. Well, I mean, that's unbelievable.
Exactly. I didn't even know I was hurt. I think I drove us back to Oakland for like a party and we're out the whole night. And then arm was swollen, or shoulder was swollen the next day. I'm like, I probably should go to the doctor.
I think I hurt something. Yeah. That's unbelievable, man. That's awesome. That's cool though, man. Sixth place. I mean, that's pretty huge. I mean, I'm impressed.
Yeah.
I mean, that's fantastic, man. Would you say that riding bikes translates to doing tax work or being an accountant? Does it make you better at it?
Yeah, absolutely. For a couple reasons. First of all, like when you have to see yourself through some of the Hurt Locker moments,
right?
It translates well to being in the busy season and taxes and knowing what you're capable of and your boundaries, your own limits.
Yeah.
On the flip side, though, too, is like when you look at I was the guy when I was at PwC. If you rode bikes, you wanted to talk with Scott because you knew Scott rode bikes.
Oh, okay.
And it gave common ground. So you're like, oh, this was like, it's a lot of fun. So you had partners that were getting into biking or they were into it. And
yeah,
you had new hires that were trying to buy them and the whole spectrum. And it was a lot of fun to have that community around it with them.
Yeah. And so how did you bring that up? I mean, how does that come up in conversation? Because I know a lot of people, you know, they have a hobby or a passion, but they're like, well, it has nothing to do with accounting, so I'm not going to talk about it because there's no charge code to talk about cycling. How did that usually come up for you?
People probably ask me like what I did in the morning.
Right.
Some type of question along those lines. And yeah. Practically every morning I biked across the Golden Gate Bridge.
Wow. Yeah.
But I was also in early. I'm an early riser. So, you know, I'm out. I biked across the Golden Gate. I'm back. I've done all this stuff and I'm in the office and I don't think people believed me. So then like, you know, you load up Strava and then they're like, holy crap, you've gone like 30 miles before even showing up to the office.
Right.
And I was like, yeah, that's what I do. I like this stuff.
Yeah. I'm a little bit crazy.
So then the word spreads.
And then you find other cyclists as well, or even people that are, you know, not maybe not as rabid, but still ride.
Mm-hmm.
And then, mm-hmm. And then you have something in common. And what do you know? I mean, you're a staff and you're talking to partners. You know, and that relationship would have never happened if you were just talking about tax all day long.
Yeah. Yeah, they can trump me in tax all day.
Right.
But bikes, I got them.
Oh, that's a good point right there. That's my one up. Yeah, you're in my world now, buddy. Like, that's hilarious. That's so funny. So, I mean, certainly stronger relationships, you know, with coworkers, at the very least.
And you used to be able to put pictures up that cube,
right?
Sorry for interrupting you, you used to be able to put pictures in the cubes. I don't even think they have cubes anymore. So I don't know what you do.
Yeah, it's all the hoteling and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what made you want to just open up and not be scared that people were going to judge you for being less of an accountant because you have something outside of work that's maybe more important than your job?
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. And, you know, I was like, because I lost a lot of weight and like when I was like 18 to 20 and that's when I got into biking and everything.
Yeah.
I've always been like big on the health and fitness side and that's, you know, could be an area of improvement in accounting.
Right.
So I took it passionately kind of on myself to like start the Biggest Loser challenges at the office.
Oh,
and
okay.
I started like, hey, let's run once a week in busy season. So like Wednesday nights we'd go on runs and anyone that wanted to come would go.
Yeah.
So I guess I didn't make it so much of a secret that I was interested in everyone kind of taking care of themselves, even as they dedicate so much of their times and their self to the firm.
Yeah. So you made it more than just about you, which is great. Because then no one can really get angry,
mm-hmm.
You know, or think that, you know, that you're taken away from from work. Because, I mean, that's the biggest thing is just people look at these hobbies and passions as kind of throwaways or nice to haves or, well, if you have some extra time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, clearly you're dedicating time to it, which is fantastic, man. That's really cool. Really cool. How much do you think it's on the organization itself, the firm, to create a culture where it's okay for people to talk about their hobbies, passions, and how much do you think it's on the individual just to go and create that Biggest Loser challenge or, you know, create that Wednesday night running group or whatever?
It's a good question because I didn't ask permission, that's for sure.
Right.
Probably the closest thing I asked for permission was like, when you're talking to the partners, I'm like, do you want to be in? Are you in?
Right, exactly. It's not even permission. It's this is happening. Are you in or not?
Because of like our background and we're in, like I'm in the tax world. My first answer is going to be it depends.
Right.
And
exactly.
I'm going to say like if you're in the big four, you take it on yourself. It's up to you to create the culture because that culture is established and you do have a lot of leeway to make it your own.
Yeah, I agree.
But when you start looking at a lot, like a really, really small firm, and I've worked at the spectrum, I guess. The smaller firm, I don't see the barrier being there. But man, if the owner is just like not interested, it's gonna be tough to be like, yeah, hey, how about we take people away from doing these tax returns to go on a run? And there's only three people, and they're all gone while the owner's sitting there, not running, not happy, and not having employees working.
Yeah,
probably need to get owner buy-in on that small scale.
Right. Yeah, because I mean, I think what you're saying is that you know the smaller the group, the more the top down matters. Where you know within the big four, you know as a whole, yeah, you can create your own little domain. But if you have a manager that's, you know, just a real curmudgeon, then that's going to, you know, really make it tough, you know, because, you know, mm-hmm. as you zero in on your little, you know, your little area, then that top down tone really, really matters more and more. So, you know, that's an excellent point. But I love how you were like, I never asked permission. You know, it was just go do it. Because I think that's the thing is most accountants and most professionals in general are just super risk averse and they're afraid that they're going to get in trouble and come to find out it's not only you're not in trouble, you're celebrated, you know, I mean, mm-hmm. it's actually a good thing.
If it feels right, do it.
Yeah. Just do it. I mean, like what's so wrong with it? I mean, it's, you know, what's the worst thing that can happen, I guess.
So do you have any words of encouragement for people that are, you know, maybe thinking of doing something or are scared to step up?
Yeah, the fail forward, fail forward and fail fast. And don't be scared of that. Failure is probably the biggest thing that when you're talking about risk aversion that you want to overcome, because it's not a bad thing. You're testing it out. You're learning something. There's a takeaway, and there's no better place than if you're at the Big Four, and there are so many people. There's lots of layers of review to learn as much as you can, and to try things out and to try communication styles out, because you'll work with people that talk and communicate in a number of ways that may be different than what you'll ever see again.
Right.
Or maybe something you'll definitely see again and you already have experience with it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's exactly it. I mean, just let it out. Because then your personality comes out, your hobbies, passions come out, who you really are is out there. And that's what people want to see and want to gravitate towards. That's for sure, man. That's for sure. So, well, that's awesome, man. I mean, congrats on all your success. And I've never ridden a bike outside of like a city bike here in New York City in a long time. So, but before I fire up the spandex and come on out there and ride with you, I do have my 17 rapid fire questions that I like to run everybody through, just to make sure that we can hang out and that we'd actually get along, because I'd imagine that riding takes a while. So here we go. So I'll start you out easy. Do you have a favorite number?
Yeah, 63.
63, why is that?
I know how to say it in French, and it was my football number when I was a sophomore. Soixante trois.
How about, do you have a favorite adult beverage?
Oh, man, I can't even pronounce the name of this beer.
Fancy German beer. All right, what's your favorite tax form?
How about 3115? Request, change accounting methods.
Oh, there you go. All right. Would you say that you're more suit and tie or jeans and a t-shirt?
I'd say my personality's jeans, t-shirt, but I like to wear a suit and a tie.
There you go. All right, mix it up a little bit. All right, how about, do you have a favorite TV show of all time?
Of all time? Let's not do that, because then but if I say like Game of Thrones right now, which would be a good hit. Let's switch around to Suits, though. Suits is a good one.
Okay. Suits is a solid answer. That's a good answer, too. Both of them. How about when it comes to computers? Are you more PC or Mac?
PC.
PC? Yeah. And when it comes to your mouse, how about right click or left click?
I think I like the options that right click gives me.
I like it. That's a good answer. Good answer, man. Would you say you're more Star Wars or Star Trek?
Star Wars.
Star Wars? Yeah, me too. Absolutely. How about pens or pencils?
Pens. Commit.
Yeah, no, nice. Okay. How about, do you have a favorite color?
Blue.
Blue. How about a least favorite color?
Red. Red and gold for the 49ers.
Okay. Wow. Least favorite. Wow. How about more Sudoku or crossword puzzle?
Crossword.
Okay. How about, do you have a favorite actor or actress?
Yeah, Matt Damon.
Oh, solid. Got four more. Are you more of an early bird or a night owl?
Early riser for sure.
Early riser. All right. And all right, would you say you're more oceans or mountains?
Mountains.
Mountains. All right. And how about cats or dogs?
Dogs, without a doubt.
Dogs, without a doubt. And the last one, the favorite thing you own or the favorite thing you have?
My bike. It's like, it's a Trek Madone. I built it in 2010, and it's like the one that Lance Armstrong rode when he was in the tour. And I love that thing.
Sweet. Yeah, man, I figured that would be your answer. So very cool, man. Very cool. Well, thanks so much, Scott, for being with me today on the Green Apple Podcast. This was fantastic.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Thanks, John.
Wow, that was so great. I loved how Scott said, don't be scared of failure, so fail forward and fail fast. That's so true. I mean, so many times we're just taught to be perfectionists, and I know I suffer from this as well, but done is better than perfect. So to get out there, experiment, like Scott said, there are controls in place to make sure that something really bad doesn't happen. And before you know it, something magnificent is what's created. So get out there and don't be scared of failure. And if you'd like to see some pictures of Scott in action or his massive bike collection, connect with him on social media maybe. Go to greenapplepodcast.com. All the links are there. And while you're on the page, please click that big green button to do the anonymous research survey about firm culture. So thanks again for subscribing and sharing this with your friends so they get the message that we're all trying to spread, which is to go out and be a green apple.